Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Danger Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are barely here for you. Jay had to get on the hamster wheel this morning to get the computer going. I'm not sure. Is it going to be okay?
Well, that's a great question. Let's hope so. I mean, it's working now, so we'll see. I have no idea what happened. All the settings remained the same from the last show, and all of a sudden it just didn't want to put me on video, didn't want to hear my voice, and you didn't want to do the show alone, so
I did.
We're a little late. Apologize to everyone, but hopefully Bill Gates has things figured out.
You know, is it wrong to eat a sloppy beef and cheddar right on the keyboard, Jay? Can we pinpoint maybe where the blame should lie here?
Arby's is so good. You don't wait till you get home to eat it. You eat it in your car.
Oh, yeah. It's unfortunate. All right. We have a lot to get to. We've got some new season segments that we've got going on this year. Mo Egger is going to join us, and we are going to do, you know what, we're going to take it easy on his tweets. We've had enough time, years now, of poking fun at his tweets. We're going to go into the Mo Egger wheelhouse with him, and we're going to have a best bets segment each week, and we're going to see who can make the most fictional dollars this year, Jay. Me, you, or Mo. Or maybe you out there can try to bet against us, and you can keep your own spreadsheets and records like Jay's going to. So we're excited about that. We're going to talk a little bit about the news going on with the team as they prepare for Sunday's opener against Pittsburgh. My season prediction story is out. Jay, you are going to take shots at that, I believe. Is that how I understand this?
Some slight shots. I think there's a few where you're a little too high on your picks and a few where you're a little too low. And before we go any farther, I do want to give a shout out. Jay Goney 2 created a tweet counter to make my life easier just in time for us to quit counting Mo's tweets. But I do want to give him a shout out for going to the effort and putting it together. Maybe we'll go back to that at some point.
No, we can still count the tweets. I got no problem with still counting his tweets.
All right,
we just don't need to make fun of his bad tweets anymore, unless we really want to, which I'm also in support of. So we were going to get into some season questions. Okay, we've got some season prediction questions that we're going to rip through our answers to, including discussing the first time, who's going to be the Bengals' first time Pro Bowler this year, which is a good time to talk about a story that Jay is going to have out. Talking to pretty much, I believe, everybody that is connected to the Bengals about who they think is going to be the first time Pro Bowler this year and kind of the breakout performer and the one that hops out onto the scene. It was a really fun conversation. We'll have more on that. So we got a bunch of questions we're going to get through, some run passer boots and things like that. And then we've got, of course, we have some good suggestions for a new name for the scoop segment. I think we got a winner.
I do too.
I think we got a winner, and I'm very excited about that. And then if you're watching here on YouTube right now, thank you for coming on. By the way, whenever anything hops up during the season that we think is deserving of a red flag, I have acquired a tiny red flag. It's China.
People's Republic of China.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't become a thing. Like, I'm not trying to be political. I just need a red flag. And this is a red flag. And I think there's a negative connotation with China. So if we need to reference any red flags that happened during the course of the season, I'm fully prepared to pull it out now for the YouTubers out there. So all that going on. If you're on, if you have questions, we're going to get to a Q&A segment here at the end. Drop them into the chat, and we'll go through some of your questions that you have. Or if you just want to take shots at me and my predictions, feel free. Someone said that they're here to go after me about my Packers Super Bowl pick. I didn't think that was controversial. I've picked the Packers like every single year since 2014 to win the Super Bowl because I'm just an Aaron Rodgers stan for some reason, even though I never learned.
Well, on your picks where I was going to say where you're high, where you're low, I was going to say where you're high is picking the Jaguars to make the playoffs. But
See, that's what I thought I was going to take the heat for. I tried to sneak that thing in there, you know? I tried to sneak it in there. All right, let's go with news here real quick to open up. You know, the news, I think we're in the news, Jay. I think we're in the news because Thursday night, 7 o'clock, 50 West Brewing Company, the big show, the big season preview show is happening. You're going to have me, Jay Moe, James Rapine from SI, Kelsey Conway from The Inquirer, Jeff Hobson, of course, from Bengals.com, Mike Traglia from CLNS. We're optimistic. Bobby of 50 West Brewing Company will be there. If you like talk enough about how much you love him and 50 West and the Bengals at just the right time, you could score a free beer probably, I bet. But we're going to be there. Previous growler winners, if you're in the house, if you can come down, it'll be a chance to collect on the growlers from over the past year. And we're going to have a great time. We're going to record at 7 o'clock right up until Rams-Bills starts at 8:30. And then we're going to hang out in the beer garden. The weather looks like it's going to be awesome. Bring a hoodie, though. And it's going to be awesome to hang out there, have some beers, watch the game. We'll all be down there. It should be an absolute great time. Can't wait for it. Also, special episode is going to be dropping in between now and then. I'm going to have an interview with Elizabeth and Caroline Blackburn. They're going to chat with me about, you know, everything that has been happening on the business side, which has been active. And it's been a while since we've chatted with them. Very excited that they're going to take the time to sit down with me. So we'll have that for you between now and the live show on Thursday night. Big, big week. Season preview week is here and we are all over it. News, Jay. Captains have been announced. We'll start there. On offense, Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Ted Karras. On defense, DJ Reader, Von Bell, Sam Hubbard. And special teams, Uncle Mike, safety Mike Thomas, is captain. Any surprises there?
Maybe Mike Thomas. I guess, you know, it was Huber last year. He was in a battle this year, so kind of a little surprised to see him lose that captainship, even though he's back. I'm not surprised by Ted Karras. As unique as that is for a guy to come in first year and be named a captain, we've seen this team do that before. They did it with Burrow and Bates 2 years ago. This is a little different coming off a Super Bowl run, a really strong roster, but you started kind of hearing that even before they had this vote yesterday that people thought that Ted Karras could be a captain on this team. And I think it just speaks volumes about what he means. It's everything. It's his personality. It's leading by example. It's leading vocally. It's the skins on the wall, so to speak, what he's done in this league. It's not a surprise, but it is a big statement.
Yeah, I'd agree. The DJ Reader thing, I'm very happy, you know, for DJ. It matters to him. We talked about maybe even being a little surprised that he wasn't one last year, but then, you know, how hard that is to have two guys from the same position group. Sam Hubbard is going to be a staple as a captain as long as him and Burrow are here together. And that's just what it is. They're sort of the core of the team leadership. But, you know, to have two guys who are both defensive linemen, because a lot of times you do have position groups kind of I would assume, I don't know, I've never actually seen the inside of the voting these players do. It is voted on by the players. But it feels like it's usually a position group is represented in each spot. To have two guys from the defensive line be there, I think speaks to how powerful their voices and their attitudes are. And you saw that all last year. I mean, Reader, whether he had a C on his chest or not, was clearly, you know, a driver for this team, you know? And so I was excited to see DJ Reader, maybe a little surprised only because of, you know, two guys from the same position group can be hard to do.
Well, I mean, that happened last year was Bell and Bates. And right. It's interesting that Jesse Bates is not. Maybe that is a surprise because these guys all came out in support of him nonstop during the whole contract situation. And maybe Jesse, you know, said DJ deserves, who knows how that inner working, but I do think that is interesting that, you know, just like Huber, a captain one year, still here the next and not a captain. I'm not sure how much to read into that, but there's something.
I don't know. I mean, look, you can't not show up and think you're going to be a captain. Like, sorry, it's cool. No one has a problem with you handling your biz. Like, go handle your business the way you want to. But the other side of that is you're not going to get voted captain again. Okay. Like, that's just, you can't have your cake and eat it too on that one. So it's fine. Like, I don't think anybody have a problem with it, but I can't imagine anybody was surprised when people weren't like, yeah, how about the guy that didn't show up until a week ago? He's really the leader here. You know, I mean, no, it's just not. You can't do both of those. They don't play together. So captains were named. Pittsburgh Steelers week is officially upon us. Of course, no one really views Steelers week the same way as they used to anymore. You know, Jay, I mean, it's like Steelers week used to have this thing to it. You know, it was, well, how are they going to overcome? But now, you know, for the season preview piece, you know, I was looking back on the last time that they had beaten the Steelers four times in a row, potentially five times in a row. And you got to go all the way back to the late 80s to the last time they had anything remotely close to this. I mean, they did six in a row back then. And so, I mean, it's been a long time since you've viewed Steelers week as one where it's like, yeah, the Bengals should just swat that gnat. I think that's kind of the way that fans view it. I don't know if the team does. I don't think you can. Opening day is a different beast. You don't sleep through. You don't like overlook opening week. Like, it's the first game. You've been itching to get back out there. They haven't played since the loss of the Super Bowl. So I don't, you know, you're not going to, but there is a bit of a sense of, okay, should be able to dispose of these guys.
You know, I've got a stat for you that goes a little bit beyond just Bengals Steelers. I was curious because, and Mark Caboli kind of referenced this on our AFC North podcast Friday about how it's brought up constantly that Mike Tomlin's never had a losing record. So I was curious if the Bengals do win the opener to beat them four times in a row, what's the list of teams that have won four in a row against a Mike Tomlin coached Steelers team? There were the Patriots from 2013 to 2017. And that's it. That's the list. The Ravens have never beat Tomlin four times in a row. The Browns obviously haven't. But there's been a lot of good teams that have put together strong runs. And nobody other than the Bill Belichick Patriots have won four straight against Tomlin. So that's on the table in the opener for the Bengals.
Jay's got stats as always. That's a good one. I like that. So it's, you know, it's really interesting when you think about how this division, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to wrap my brain around this division after our AFC North pod, and, you know, and just in doing the season preview predictions, trying, you know, putting all that out there on the record. And, you know, you go back to last year, and I think I had the Bengals and Steelers both at 8-9. And then the Browns and the Ravens as, you know, it was, I think last year we viewed it as a bit of a two team race before it started. Browns and Ravens, right? I mean, that was how I think people were viewing the way the North was going to look. And it ended up being not that. So it's, I just think people forget how unpredictable this thing can be. And, you know, is there a scenario where the Steelers are scary? Yeah. I mean, sure. It wouldn't be because you heard Mark Caboli talk about their offensive line. I mean, which was great, by the way. I mean, you know, I think you could hear a little bit of the doom and gloom. But yeah, I think logistically this feels more like a two-team race this year than last year. Maybe I'm just saying that because I still have last year's results fresh on my brain. If I went back and asked September 6, 2021 version of myself, a lesser version of me, less wise. You know, I'd warn him about a few things, first of all. You know, maybe just think about the marathon, okay, ahead of you. But also, you know, how much of a two-team race really is it? I think it's more. I think it's more.
I do as well. I Cleveland has a great roster. They just have that quarterback issue. Can Brissett be?
They just have that quarterback.
I know that's the biggest.
If you care about the quarterback position,
but you know you've seen it where you know a quarterback that has great pieces around him can be serviceable enough to win games, be in the hunt. And yes, I think Pittsburgh is going to be a lot better than people think. So I think they both can get to the playoffs. I don't know. As I said Friday, I do think it's mainly between the Bengals and the Steelers or the Bengals and the Ravens as the division champion. I think I had Steelers at 15%, but Browns at 5%. I'm not sleeping on the Steelers. Anytime Mike Tomlin's coaching that team and that defense has the pieces they do, they can absolutely be a force.
Yeah, there was a lot of referencing 17-16 victories in that, and I just, you know, I don't see there being a lot of games where the Bengals are only scoring 17 and 16 points. Who knows? Maybe we'll find out that Sunday is one of them. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Mo, we've never played poker together, have we?
We have not, no.
I mean, are you a poker guy?
I'm not a huge poker guy, no.
Yeah. No. Were you part of the poker boom? Like when the poker boom was happening and everybody was getting reinvested? We were of an age where we were right, like in that, you know, in your 20s during the poker boom was a good time to like just dudes just got together and played cards like way more than we should have.
Guys were getting together and playing cards a lot, and cards was on TV all the time. I mean, you know, it was like during the day, ESPN and the sports networks really hadn't launched into, you know, all day long scream fests. And so if you turned on one of those channels, invariably you were going to see people playing cards. And what I will tell you is this, at the time of this explosion, I was married to my first wife who was, and I'm guessing still is, a school counselor. And she would say like, yeah, I cut through the cafeteria and the kids are playing Hold'em. And I'm going, well, things have changed drastically since I was in grade school. So
no doubt.
There you go.
Not passing out poker chips on the first day of kindergarten. Yeah. Jay, do you have a tweet count? Someone made a tweet counter. Is that someone made one?
Jay? Yeah. Jay Goney, two came up with it. First of all, though, I do want to say I got swatted in elementary school for pitching quarters. So I was never a poker guy, but I do have a history of getting in trouble in school for gambling.
Also, aging yourself with the swatting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've been in so many of your NCAA pools. I could see you being the kid running a gambling racket, you know, when you're 12 years old. So, you know,
it's true.
So how does the tweet counter work?
Well, I just plug in a start date and time, an end date and time, and it gives me all of his tweets, all of his replies, and this week's total is 138.
Good number. Active week. Appreciate that. We're getting away from making fun of your tweets, Mo, unless I really want to, which is very possible. So I'm kind of going to get away from that. And I thought we could go a little bit more into your wheelhouse, our wheelhouse potentially. And that is fictional for entertainment purposes only betting. Where we're just competing against each other over the course of a year to see who can make more fictional for entertainment purposes only money.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on board with this?
100%. As a matter of fact, right before you texted me, I was looking up the history in the 21st century of Super Bowl losers week one, how they did against the spread the following year. Wow. And it ain't pretty. It ain't
wow.
So like I was doing this hard research right when you texted me about this morning.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to that in a second. We're going to get into what's going to be our new competitive betting segment here. But I want to start with this one. First of all, thank you for having me on your podcast, which is up now. I had somebody ask for this and we referenced it. I talked about the keychain that I have that I shook into the microphone during that particular episode. The one that it kind of reminds me that you're supposed to remember who you were when you were supposed to say this is the job that you always wanted. And let's see. Here's the retro Bengals logo right there. That's a super throwback keychain is what that is. So people were asking for the keychain. There's the keychain that is from, I believe, 1982. Somewhere in that. Whenever they first got that helmet, you know, so 81, 82, 81. I think is how old it is. But so go listen to that for more, but background on that story and so much more. You asked me about Key West, which I love to talk about forever. So it was a great time. I appreciate you having me on and the kind words you said. We're too kind. You didn't have to do that.
Well, I said it at the top of the thing. You were our test episode. You know, so there was
basically
a really
you weren't afraid to hurt my feelings if the thing blew up.
There was a really good chance that thing was never going to see the light of day. And then when it worked, we're like, all right, cool. Let's slap it on the end and we'll play it the first week of the NFL season. So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate that. 3 to 4 today, Tuesday, every Tuesday at More Lion Lager House. Come on down and see myself and Mo is there till 6, of course. Every Tuesday. I'm very, very excited about it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's huge.
Let's talk about what does a successful season look like? What is that to you? What does a successful season look like for the Bengals? And because I wrote this in my season preview and prediction, it's not fair to anybody to predict they'll win the Super Bowl. Like it's just, once you get to a certain level, it's just, that's not a fair thing. You predict people will be in the mix at the very end. Okay. But to say they'll definitely win the Super Bowl. And if they don't, it sucks. Like, come on now. I mean, I don't buy that. What for you? Maybe you disagree. What for you is a successful season?
I don't disagree with you. At the same time, I think many of us have framed the first 5 years of Burrow's career as the window in which you've got to win a title because it's going to become a lot more difficult to build around a quarterback making the kind of coin that he's going to be getting. And so 2 years are gone. This is one of those seasons. So if you look at it from that standpoint, and a lot of people do, maybe you guys don't, but there's a lot of folks who have said the importance of winning while you have a quarterback like Joe Burrow under a rookie contract cannot be overstated. if those, and I'm including the fifth year, If those first 5 years come and go and nobody's won a ring, that's going to feel underwhelming. Well, this is one of those seasons. So, you know, to a degree, you could say, well, look, I mean, okay, if you don't win it this year, time's running out on the rookie contract. But yeah, I mean, look, I have a hard time saying it's Super Bowl or bust. And if anything, last year illustrated how hard it is to get there, how hard it is to even come as close as they did. So for me, I start with, okay, what's failure? Failure would be they don't make the postseason. I think we would all agree, given the team they have, given what they accomplished last year, given the quarterback, based on how we feel about the roster heading into the season, even if you build in maybe slightly worse injury luck, as long as it just doesn't wreak havoc with the team, including on starting QB, missing the postseason, I don't care if they finish with the same record, would feel incredibly underwhelming. Okay, so that's failure. So is success, you sneak in as the 7 and you suffer Pittsburgh's fate last year where you get blown out? Well, I think that would feel pretty underwhelming as well, quite frankly. So for me, I think it's hard to say the season is a failure if they win the AFC North. good division. Baltimore certainly appears poised to be significantly better than they were last year, mainly because they're healthy. You stave them off, you win the division, you get a home game. Boy, I'd have a hard time saying that's a failure if that's all they do. So I'll sort of say that. Win the division, unmitigated success. But then again, okay, you're at home in the postseason. What's your seed? Who do you lose to? How does that game unfold? So I'll say win the division and then let's take our chances. Playing at home, higher seeded team, let's go. And to me, if they win the division, they will have outlasted a really good Baltimore team, which tells me they're, from a health standpoint, in pretty good shape. I'll do that. Then there's the middle area. It's, well, they finish in second or third, and they make it as a wild card. And then I think how you view the season may be solely judged on how far they advance in the postseason, if they do at all. What I will say is this: the most refreshing thing about being a Bengals fan and talking about them on the radio is we are no longer focusing on winning one stupid playoff. That is behind us. I am so happy about that. That to me was the cathartic thing about what they did against the Raiders last year. It's like, all right, cross that off. We don't have to do that anymore. We are going to do it with the Reds forever, but I like that. I'll say win the division, but you know, again, if you win the division and then lose a home playoff game, are we going to all feel great about that? How much do you allow them to cash in the equity built up last year? And then at what point, how long do you let them go without winning a title before you say, look, it is championship or bust? Because at some point you are going to get there. I mean, hell, they're saying that about the Buffalo Bills right now, right? Like anything shy of a title is failure. At what point do we get to that spot with the Bengals, if ever? But it's a long-winded answer to your question. I'll say win the AFC North, and I think we'll all feel pretty good about what they accomplished, at least in the regular season.
Dang, Mo just called me stupid because I was going to say advance in the playoffs, and that's it. That's a successful season if you advance in the playoffs. Yes, the championship or bust, I don't agree with that at all. You do make a good point, though. If they go 14-3, 15-2 somehow and win and get the number one seed and win the division and then lose that first game, you can't say that wasn't a successful season, but it would be a disappointment, obviously, sure, to have that home game, not even on wild card weekend, the following weekend, and to lose. But as much as last year kind of changed the narrative around this team, it's still for years we talked about that would define success as advancing in the playoffs. And so I if they get in as a wild card and upset somebody, or if they win the division and win a game at home, I think that's where it starts. If as long as they win one playoff game, I think you have to consider this year a success.
I would agree with that. I guess for me, if you go, okay, this season wasn't successful. Okay. Well, the opposite is failure. Failure to me comes with fallout. It comes with ramifications, right? So if the season's a failure, what is that going to mean? Is it going to mean they change coaches? I think most would say probably not. Does it mean they're going to blow up what they're doing? Probably. Like what? I guess what I would want to know is if the season's a failure, what comes of that? And maybe it's, look, they just they weren't as lucky. They had a bunch of injuries. Just get everybody healthy, bring the band back together, and we're okay. You know, we talked before last season, you know, okay, they've got to get to a certain number of wins, which is going to, you know, call the dogs off with Zach. What was that win total? 7, 8, you know, it seems weird to even be thinking about now, but I mean, we were framing the failure success conversation, I think, around, well, if they fail, here's what's going to have to happen, and here's what might happen, or here's what will happen. I think that's a little bit more difficult to do right now, don't you?
Yeah. This is something that we do every year. Like, this is a standard, you know, trope for all of us is what's a success, what's failure. It's never been harder to answer because you had the ultimate success last year. It's like, and you're right. And how much of that is still carried over? How much of that does give you equity this year? To me, you look at the team that they have, because I do think that if they don't make it to a certain level, there's going to be some very obvious, excusable excuses, if you will, you know, of it was going to be injury, or maybe Burrow went down, or just something that was, it's not going to be massive regression everywhere. I just don't see that given the state of their roster. roster being the case. So to me, taking away the concept of excusable excuses would be, look, being that you need to be in that big four. I think if you're there in the AFC, this deep, loaded AFC, and you're there with some combination of Herbert, Mahomes, you know, in there with Burrow, what Allen, like if you're there in that group of the last four state left standing in the AFC, that's a friggin' accomplishment this year, to be honest. And so I you get in there, and I think any of those teams playing against each other in that level are flipping coins, man. Like you just, there's too much talent. There's too many good quarterbacks in the AFC that are built to win now, that are tested for the most part. And that's not counting whatever, you know, we're going to see somebody come out of team or two come out of nowhere a little bit. The Jags maybe, huh? We're going to see somebody come out of nowhere and become relevant. Maybe Baltimore. Maybe we're talking about Lamar Jackson in that same vein. To be in that mix, to me, is certainly success. I think what you're right, but making the they got to make the playoffs. I think almost regardless, you got to make the playoffs. There's a gray area in the middle of what you are comfortable with between that and playing amongst the last four in the AFC. But at that point, take your chances. Keep putting yourself in that pot. Right, it's the Brady philosophy. Be in the AFC title game every year, and eventually you're going to hold Lombardis.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go along with that. I mean, you know, to me, it's like, all right, win the division, lose a playoff game. I would need to know the context, right? Who was available? Who was healthy? Who'd they play? All that sort of stuff. If they win a playoff game, I would really have a hard time going failure. I mean, I'd have a hard time doing that. But I also do think if they didn't win it last year, they didn't win it this year. Well, if they don't win it next year, and they don't win it the year after that, at what point does it go, okay, this is cool, you're relevant, this is what we've been waiting for, but boy, you got to hoist a Lombardi, man. I mean, you know, to really sort of feel good about what they're doing, at some point you do need to win a title. So I would wonder, you know, let's say we're having the same conversation 2 years from now, how much of it then is championship or bust? But you, the three of us all know, there are folks for whom anything shy of winning a title, you know, this team is going to be a victim of last year's team success. Anything shy of winning a title is now going to be viewed for some, specifically through the lens of, well, they failed, right? I mean, they took that step last year. All they did was equal it, even if they got back to the Super Bowl and lost. So, but yeah, for me, if you win your division, you're playing at home, chances are you're going to be favored. Take the next step, win one playoff game. I think most of us would walk away from the season going, you know what, that was pretty damn good.
If winning a title is your baseline for not being failure, you should probably move out of Cincinnati, because we have not seen a title in these parts in a long time.
Yes. Wire to wire. Where's Quiñones? It was a long time ago, Mo.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, we all know that's just how it works for a lot of people. And again, I'm a huge fan of, you know, relevancy and they matter. And when your team matters, if your team matters for a long enough stretch of time, at some point, you know, there's a pretty good chance they're going to win one. But, you know, again, I mean, if we're having the same conversation 2 years from now, and it's been, boy, they've come close and they've won some playoff games, and boy, they're really fun to watch, but where's the title? I think it'd be interesting to see how people are framing, you know, individual seasons and this whole era. If they don't remember.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's get to best bets, Mo. Do you like that as a title? Is that creative?
Sure.
They both have B. It's never been used before. I like making Mo fictional money. I like that.
Okay. Good job, Dan.
We'll go with that. We finally got our other working title taken care of, Jay, and now we've got to come up and see if maybe this one holds up. Again, if listeners have good ideas for the name of what this segment should be, we'll take it from you. You guys hit a home run on the last one you're about to find out about, so maybe you'll have another one. Okay, so we've got basically $20, two fictional bets that you can make. The first one, Bengals related. The second one can be anything else. I mean, what, Grammys, ESPYs, like who will win The Bachelorette? I'm sure there's places you could go with that. Probably staying in the world of the NFL and sports, but, you know, you go wherever you want to with the other one. So I've got, we've all got our sit down here. So, Mo, I'll let you begin.
So I mentioned what I was looking up today, and I was doing this for my own purposes, but since I referenced it, I'll tell you this. So Cincinnati is a home favorite week one, laying 6.5 points against Pittsburgh. Super Bowl losers against the spread this century, their following game, 4-18.
Wow.
Yikes.
Not good. 9-13 straight up. So the Super Bowl hangover might not be real, but Super Bowl losing teams coming back week one and failing to cover the spread is. Division underdogs week one since 2005, 61-41-2 against the spread. And since 2014, 29-9-1. That is a 76% cover rate. So division underdogs in a divisional game week one tend to cover. That leans us toward Pittsburgh. Also, it's worth mentioning Mike Tomlin as an underdog, 45-23-2, by far and away the best percentage against the spread of any coach as an underdog in the National Football League. Does any of that mean that Pittsburgh's going to cover the number on Sunday? No. I'm going to stay away from that, but what I will go with is Pittsburgh under 17.5 points. Mitch Trubisky and the guys, Paul, and you and I have talked about this. This Bengals defense could be excellent. There's a lot of uncertainty with the Steelers on the road offensively. I know Najee Harris is really, really good. I don't trust Trubisky in this spot. 17 sort of feels like a good cap to put on the Steelers. If they only score 17 points, they're not going to win the game. But 17.5, I don't think they get more than 3 scores, and I don't think one of those scores is going to be anything but a field goal. So if I have to make one Bengals-related bet, I'm going to go Pittsburgh under 17.5 points. And again, if you're going to do that, and then I'm allowed to make other bets, well, it's hard for me to believe that Cincinnati won't at least score 18, and then you would go money line Bengals. Might still be kind of hard for them against that defense to cover the number, and it's because of that Pittsburgh defense and just the overall jankiness of week one for a team that really didn't play its main guys during the preseason. I would also maybe lean towards Cincinnati under, which I think is 26.5. But if there's one I feel better about more than any, Pittsburgh under 17.5 points week one.
I like that.
So are you putting all 20 on that one, or?
I was allowed one Bengals bet, right?
Yes. One Bengals bet and one anything else bet. So you can choose how much or you how much of your 20 that you want to
I'm going $15.
$15 on that. 15 okay. Fictional bucks. units.
Now, do you want the other one?
Yeah.
So, I'm gonna aim for value here with my five, and I'll be honest with you. There's two. Okay, they're futures bets. One is if I could figure out a way to parlay, and I'm anti-parlay betting, but if I could figure out a way to throw together Cincinnati to win the AFC North, New England to finish in last place in the AFC, and Kansas City to make the playoffs, no, I haven't done the math on this, but the odds of that, pretty damn good. So you're getting a team that's in the AFC Championship game every year. You're betting on them not making the postseason in that tough division. I think the Patriots are going to stink. You can tell me all you want about Bill Belichick. He's got defensive dudes calling plays. I don't think there's anybody to throw to. I'm not a Mac Jones guy. I think Miami's got a chance to be pretty good. Jets had a good offseason. Buffalo should be excellent. And then Cincinnati to win the division in what I think is going to be a two-team race. If I could throw those three together, that's awfully tempting. Now, the other one that I love, though, the Offensive Player of the Year. This is the AP NFL Offensive Player of the Year. In recent years has not gone to a quarterback. Two of the last 3 years, it's gone to a wide receiver. Ja'Marr Chase to be the NFL's Offensive Player of the Year is at plus 3,300 at multiple books. That is insane value. Now, all I need is for Ja'Marr Chase to be the NFL Offensive Player of the Year. There's like two dozen dudes listed ahead of him who have better odds. I'm probably going to lean that just because I'd love to be the guy holding the ticket at the end if he actually wins it. And there are three different Player of the Year awards. There's Pro Football Writers Association of America. There's like, I don't know what the other one is. And then there's the, it's got to be the AP award. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver won it last year. Wide receiver won it 3 years ago. If Ja'Marr Chase has the sort of season that many expect, how's he not in the conversation? So I love that value. I wouldn't maybe not do it at like 13, but at plus 3,300, I think I'm more likely to go there with my extra $5 than the other three teamer futures bet. So Ja'Marr Chase, Offensive Player of the Year, plus 3,300.
Wow. All right. I like it. Jay, are you marking these down?
I am. He could be in last place and hit that at the end and win the whole thing.
I like the nature. I like the long play there.
So we're keeping standings? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Season standings. Oh, no. Most over the course of the entire season. Season standings. That's right.
Do I always have to provide some sort of betting nugget, like the lines thing? That I literally was sitting here doing that because I was curious how.
I appreciate these nuggets.
If you wanted to do that crazy parlay, I could look up what the odds are and then put that. There's betting calculators out there. You can put it in and see what
the
it would
two
pay.
Were made. The two bets have been made. It's over. We're not going to go look up anymore. Jay,
I'm
what do you got?
Anti parlay as a general rule, but I'm intrigued because I'm going to do each of those individually, and then I'm like, well, wait a minute. What if I had all three together and the hits, and then that'd be a really fun January. So
that would be.
But I'm going to go Ja'Marr Chase.
All right, Jay, you're up.
Yeah, I'm with Mo. I'm anti-parlay. That's for people chasing their money. This is week one. Nobody's chasing anything yet. So my non-Bengals pick, Baker Mayfield over 219.5 passing yards. I just think he's going to torch the Browns. The Browns have a great defense, but we know what Baker Mayfield is like when he gets pissed off, when he feels slighted. I think he's going to have a huge day. And you... 220 is not a huge day and you still win the bet. So I'm taking Baker Mayfield over 219.5 passing yards. I'm only going to put $6 on that. My big one, and I can't believe I found this. You talked about 76% winning. I've got a 15-year trend that hits 81% of the time. The Steelers are plus 118 to be the team to score last in the first half against the Bengals. Mm. 25 of the last 31 games they've scored in the final 2 minutes of the first half. It's unreal how many times they do that to the Bengals. So $14 at plus 118 is going to win me 26. That's going to be my Bengals bet. Steelers will be the last team to score in the first half.
Okay. All right. Mark it down. I've got two long-term bets here. I want to keep my hope alive all year for something to happen. I've got, I'm going to do this one for 15, and that's Bengals are 7-1
to win 13 games this year. Now, I have them winning 11, and I had a hard time keeping them down at 11. I was trying to, you know, kind of take it easy on the full expectations, but 13-4, like, feels like a realistic over, you know, for that doesn't feel crazy to me to say at all. And to get that at 7-1 over the course of a year, I like those odds. So I'm taking that and give me that for 15 and try to hit a big one right at the end there. And then my flyer, I got to keep going with it. I got to ride my trend. I got to ride my gut, Jay. Doug Peterson, coach of the year, 16-1. Okay. 16-1. That look, if the Jags make the playoffs, if the Jags go 9-8 under new coach Doug Peterson, the anti-herb effect, all of that stuff, people are going to love that story. People are going to eat up that story for coach of the year. All he needs is like to make Trevor Lawrence be good. Wasn't Trevor Lawrence good? I thought Trevor Lawrence was supposed to be really good. Okay. And I believe that Trevor Lawrence can be good in year two with a real coach who took a team to the Super Bowl. So give me Doug Peterson at 16-1 to win coach of the year. And I'm also going to have a very fun January. So we're a lot of long game happening here. I like that. All right, Jay, you got them all marked down.
I've got them. Yes.
I don't want to really have to watch that NFL honor show that's on the Saturday night before the Super Bowl.
Well, you don't have to. I'll just tell you.
But now, like, there's a—I mean, if he's one of the finalists, I'm gonna have to watch that, and now that's gonna be an anxiety-filled Saturday night that typically is not. So that I'm not looking forward to with my Jamar Chase bet. But if there's a payoff at the end of it, I guess it'll be worth it.
It'll be worth it. All right, Mo, I will see you at 3 o'clock at the Moorline Logger House today.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, so we've kind of started to tip our hands a little bit on predictions, and great to hear from Mo as always. But we got a little bit more in the season predictions, which I have up on the site right now. You can go take a look at. I'm on the record. You can hold me to it. You have receipts, okay? I have the Bengals winning the AFC North by beating Baltimore in the last week of the season. Going 11-6. I have all the final stats there, which include a few significant changes for Joe Mixon, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins, and Joe Burrow. I won't dive too deep into that. You can go read it. Jay, I'll allow you to take shots. What did you like? What did you not like? Where do you disagree with me?
Okay, so I thought you came in low on three totals or three numbers here. The first one, you have Joe Burrow with 5 interceptions. It's going to be higher than that. I don't think it's going to be crazy, but I mean, you're going to have 3 or 4 bad break, bad bounce interceptions, batted balls, drop balls. I just hit while you're throwing. I think it's almost a lock that he's going to have more than 5 interceptions this year. The other one, you have Mike Hilton with 1 sack. And yes, he did not have any sacks last year, but so much was made about him being the best corner blitzing or slot blitzing corner in the league. When I talked to him for the who's next to make their first Pro Bowl for the Bengals, he was the only guy that picked himself. And he said, second year in Lou's system, Lou now knows how to use me and let me make plays. I don't know if he's trying to nudge Lou to free him up to blitz more or if he sees that coming, but I think he gets more than 1 sack this year. And then the other one, Jesse Bates, more than 3 interceptions. 26 times in Bengals history, they've had a 500 or better record. Only 3 times did the leading interceptor have 3 or fewer. I think Bates is my pick to lead this team in interceptions this year. And I see him, I don't know if he's going to go crazy and be up in the 6-7 range, but I think he gets at least 4. I think he's over 3.
Never had more than 3 in his career.
I know, but it's a contract year. I mean,
it's over last year.
Yeah, I know, but he kind of was in his head last year. I think that part's behind him. He is going to be super motivated this year. The defense is going to be better. The offense is going to be better. If they're jumping on people, then the other team's going to be throwing even more, taking more chances. I just, that one may be my least likely of the three on this list, but I think he goes more than three.
That's fair. That's fair. I think that I was trying to go a lot off of recent history and play to the mm-hmm. history there, and I, you know, I have a hard time having him go more where he's had really great seasons before and never had more than three. The Burrow thing, I'll say this. I mean, I think people forget, you know, how good he got at taking care of the football and avoiding turnover-worthy plays and avoiding interceptions that the second half of last season. I felt like when he really started to focus on that, that kind of became his next evolution that happened mid-season last year. Was he did such a good job taking care of the ball. And there were bad bounces that played a big role in the picks that he ended up with the beginning of last season. I mean, the second half of last season, it's him and Aaron Rodgers, man. Like, as far as the fewest turnover-worthy plays and not having interceptions. So, I mean, Aaron Rodgers does it every year where he's got, like, two picks, right? Like, I don't think it's crazy to say that Burrow will end up being that kind of guy. I think, you know, it's not like they both don't have some gunslinger to their game and some spontaneous play to their game. They just know how to take care of the ball. And I think he's going to have a little bit more focus on keeping it out of harm's way. And just judging by the evolution that we saw in the midpoint of last year, I'm betting on Burrow becoming that kind of guy this year. And that being a staple of his career from this point forward of cutting back on the interceptions, a better understanding of where not to throw it, and his receivers doing a better job of keeping him out of harm's way with that as well, catching the ball more often, just everything clicking a little bit better. So that's where that came from. That is the big major, you know, one of the biggest major changes in Burrow's numbers that I wanted to illustrate with that was I think we see it go that way this year based off what we saw in his development last year. So in the postseason, I have the Bengals winning their first playoff game. So a success by the standards that we just talked about. I have them as the 3-seed, beating the Ravens again, so having to go back-to-back in the final week of the season with a win, and then doing it again in the wild card round. And then I have them, their season ending in SoFi Stadium again, this time at the Chargers. I hate myself, Jay, for picking the Chargers. I have been anti-Chargers hype, and I am anti-Chargers hype. But yet, as I started going through it, I'm still not totally comfortable with the Bills. Like, I there's just something there that's not sitting right with me, probably because too many people are crowning them. And then you look at the rest, and yeah, there is a lot to like about Chargers. I hated myself, though, for putting them in the Super Bowl. I did. I have Chargers over Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. But I get, you know, when you get to Chiefs, Bills, Chargers, Bengals, man, like, to me, I think there's a tier there of when you're sort of quarterback play, well-rounded teams, offense, defense, playmakers. I think there's a bit of a tier there. And we'll see as the season goes along. But for me, the way I viewed it was those four, any combination of those four. Again, if we were doing the bet, combo those four together to play or win the Super Bowl to try to get odds, I would confidently do that for a big number.
I think a surprise team will be in the final four. One of those four won't make it. I'm not going to have a hot take and say who it's going to be, but it's
Jags.
Yeah. Let's just get them to the playoffs instead of getting to the final four. I went over the three numbers where I thought you were low. I've got three where I thought you were high. One is Joe Mixon, 14 TDs. I looked it up. There's only been seven instances in Bengals history where someone scored 14 or more TDs. Only one guy's done it more than once in his career. Joe did it, had 16 last year, and that was Pete Johnson, and he never did it in back-to-back years. So that would be history for Mixon to hit 14 2 years in a row after getting 16 last year. Also going to go lower for Ja'Marr Chase with 11 touchdowns. Kind of the same thought process here. Only eight guys in Bengals history have had, or only eight times in Bengals history has there been someone to catch 11 receiving TDs. It's just as great as Ja'Marr Chase is. We've talked about it all preseason, offseason, that the coverage is going to come his way. They've got a bunch of other weapons in that red zone. He's going to be doing his stuff underneath instead of the over the top. I think there's a slighter regression or a bigger regression there, touchdown wise. And then the last one, you had the Bengals on your week by week at 7-2 at the bye. I'm going to go lower than 7 wins when they get to the bye.
that first part of the season, man, it feels like they should feast.
They should. Really,
I mean, they're staying healthy, you know, the continuity that they have, the ability to pick up from where they were last year. A lot of teams with new quarterbacks, new coaches, uncertain situations. It's just, you know, it feels like they should win a bunch of tilts there.
There's always that clunker. And so Jets, Panthers, or Falcons, one of those three is going to upset the Bengals.
Wow. All right. Bold. That is a bold claim. So I have the Packers over the Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game, and Packers beating the Chargers. I pick the Packers like every year. Like I keep trying to pick Aaron Rodgers. I just feel like he's going to get a second one before it's over. He's won back-to-back MVPs. Like, he's been good. Their defense is going to be really good. I know he lost Devontae Adams. People don't like this is the same thing with the Bengals. Because you got Aaron Rodgers, people want to talk about Devontae Adams. People don't talk about the Packers' defense enough. Their defense is going to be awesome. Awesome. Okay? They have so many players. And you have a great defense with Aaron Rodgers. I don't care about the rest of it. You know, I think that they'll find they've been there. They've been at the doorstep over and over again. They'll find a way to break through. So I'm gonna keep pounding the Packers. But yeah, there's so many teams that certainly could end up being predictions certain to go wrong. You know, we didn't talk a lot about the defense again. And I, you know, blame myself because that's the point of Astoria, you know, kind of a big story I've been working on for the last couple of weeks is about this defense and about what is that next level and what is it about the disrespect of people not talking about them and overlooking them that drives them. And during the portion of talking to a ton of people about that, I had one really good conversation with Chidobe Awuzie. I wanted to bring you a portion of it. There's a couple of different stories in here. One that is going to be coming later, that we kind of mentioned too, but really about this defense, the idea of disrespect, and the fact that people aren't talking about it. When I talked to everybody, the one most underrated player people said over and over again, Chidobe Awuzie. Why do more people not talk about how good he is? They, I think, widely within the building, recognized as one of the most underrated players on this entire team, if not in the league. So here's a little bit of my combo with Cheeto.
You heard me talking to Jermaine the other day, and he pointed out you as the most underrated guy. That's been a popular opinion. Do you hate that? As being the idea of like, I know I want to be properly rated and recognized. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's like.
I mean, it's all just a respect thing to me. You know, it's like one of those things. Like, if you know, you know. You know what I'm saying? And those people that know, you know, I hope that I gain their respect. You know?
Yeah.
Underrated thing, overrated thing. I think it's all the product of what you put on the field, and I'm very aware that I'm on a new team. You know, I've had a great or good, decent year, however you want to call it. And I also know that you have to do it on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking forward to this year and the challenges that it brings to see if I can do it again. That's my whole goal, is to just be this player. You know, so I know the more that I do it, naturally, it'll rate itself. You know?
There's one thing in there that I really liked amongst a bunch of things, and that is, I feel like he's kind of a microcosm of the way people view this Bengals defense. Mm-hmm. Do it one more year to be that player, right? You can't just do it once. And I think that's where so much of the skepticism lives with the Bengals. You know, people will point out, oh, the DVOA was in the back of the teens and they got all these turnovers and they did it once. Okay, but can they replicate that? Can they prove that they can be that team, that this is who they are? I think there's every sign points to them being able to do that. But just like Cheeto saying in his own specific case, this is the year to prove you are this. This is the level. This is the baseline that we play at, that I play at. And I think for that fact, there's a real motivation still there amongst all these guys. And, you know, Cheeto goes on to say it. I mean, look, it's time to let them know, right? He says it's time to let them know. And enough quiet, enough humble, go out there and do it. And so I loved that. I loved that from him.
That, you know, Cheeto came in third place in my story, asking guys who was most likely to make their first Pro Bowl this year. And a lot of the comments were the same way, that he's already Pro Bowl caliber. It now five primetime games, a lot more high profile games. He's going to show everybody how good of a player he is, just as this defense is going to have a chance to really prove that last year was not a fluke. And so I love how those both of those kind of go hand in hand, because he obviously has a ton of respect in the room, in the building, with his teammates and his coaches. It's just it's time for the rest of the fans and the league to appreciate how good he actually is.
Yeah, totally agree. I'll have that full story. We'll be out Wednesday morning on The Athletic, so make sure you check it out. Let's go season questions here. Let's start with the question that you have asked. How many people, Jay? What'd the number end up for you?
33.
33 people connected in the Bengals organization were asked, who will be a first-time Pro Bowl pick? Non-Burrow division, of course. The current Pro Bowlers are... The people who have been to a Pro Bowl on this team are who?
Trey Hendrickson, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Mixon all went for the first time last year. The only other guys on the team who've made it are Clark Harris and Kevin Huber.
Okay, so everybody else is open. My pick, Jay, and I don't know where I don't know where your rankings ended up on how it all ended up. I haven't seen it yet. Evan McPherson. I mean,
wow.
Look, the Pro Bowl is a popularity contest, and he is an international icon at this point. Like, he has made a name for himself on the biggest stages in the playoffs. Everybody knows his game winners in the distance. And I think it's going to, you know, unless things go totally sideways, people have kind of been like inducting Justin Tucker right in. But I think McPherson has a chance to take that mantle from him, and the popularity nature of the Pro Bowl, as I'm most focused on trying to get this correct, not being correct philosophically, would be, I would say, Evan McPherson was my answer.
He got a few votes, not many. I asked Evan McPherson the question, and I'm honestly trying to remember who he went with. I think he went with T. Higgins. But at the end of the conversation, he said, has anybody picked me? And I said, no, not yet. And he walked away. He's like, threw his arms up and said, I can't believe nobody picked me. I mean, he was joking around, but he was having a good time with it. And then eventually three people did pick him. So he did get his votes. Not near the top at all. The number one guy is my guy, and it's not just because of hearing the comments of everybody else. Had I not done that that polling, this still would have been my pick, and it's T. Higgins. I just think with the attention coming towards Ja'Marr Chase, with what T. Higgins is, irrespective of what Ja'Marr Chase is, he's ready. I mean, he had a big year last year, and I think this is going to really be a blowout year. Or a blow up year. He had two touchdowns in the Super Bowl. He's on the radar now. People know who he is. People view him as a number one receiver on basically 80, 90% of the other teams in the league. I think all signs point to that guy having a huge year and making his first Pro Bowl.
I mean, I thought that the problem is, receiver is just such a hard group to try to break into. I mean, it's from a positional standpoint, I don't think there's anything harder. There's so many good receivers across the entire league. I mean, when you just start looking around, you know, the AFC, you've got Stephon Diggs. Go by team, Tyreek Hill. Let's go. His own teammate, Ja'Marr Chase. Okay.
Davante Adams.
Davante Adams, Amari Cooper, let's see, Michael Pittman, you know, whoever ends up having a big year in Kansas City, Mahomes is going to make somebody big, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. I mean, there's just so many names that are household number ones. I don't disagree necessarily that T. Higgins is a good player, can be a great player, and
could have better numbers than Ja'Marr Chase by the end of the season. I mean, you look, when you put them side by side, once Chase kind of evened out, right? Once people discovered, okay, Chase is the real deal. He's a dog, and he's going to kill us if you don't pay attention. Higgins was actually the same, if not better, from a total production standpoint from that point forward, from about the midpoint of last season forward. So, you know, Higgins can absolutely be that guy again where he can – I'm not debating that, but it's just receivers, man. That is a tough nut to crack. So I, you know, for that fact, I couldn't do it. But I understand where people are coming from, and I'm putting more thought into it probably than most of the players are, because he passes the eye test in every single way when you watch him.
Right, and it was coaches, it was defensive guys, it was offense, it was across the board that he was the number one pick, and you know, I. Jesse Bates was third. So it was T. Higgins, Jesse Bates, Chidobe Awuzie were the top three.
That's interesting. More on that story, of course, will be out. Make sure you check that out in The Athletic as well, which was a lot of fun to hear as that was you know, going on over time as the numbers were piling up, some of the responses from people. I always love that stuff. I love hearing. We've done that a couple of times now this preseason to really get a view of what the team internally really thinks about who is showing well and pointing in the right direction. I think you always get the truest stuff there. And really looking forward to that story. All right, let's go. Most important stat to watch, Jay. You're a Jay's Got Stats guy, so I'm sure you've got a really good one here.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I dug up. It's just off the top of my head. I think it's going to be third down efficiency for the Bengals offense, and even more so short, third and short. That, again, we've talked about this. The teams are not going to let the Bengals beat them over the top. You're going to see those shells. They're going to have to drive the ball more often. And to do that, you're going to have to convert third downs. And they weren't great in third and short last year. So if I don't say the threat of the home run's gone, it's always going to be there, but they're not going to be able to be as reliant on this year, and they are going to have to get a lot better at keeping those chains moving, and that comes with converting third downs. And I know a lot of people might pick sacks, but I mean, they went to the Super Bowl last year giving up all those sacks, so it is important to reduce them. But I think third down efficiency is going to be the most telling stat this year for this team.
Yeah, red zone. You know, I think would probably be in that conversation. Mixing yards per carry is in that conversation, because if they really get that going, I think there's a thought that, you know, the Collins, Kappa, Karras thing will most benefit the mixing yards per carry, get that up into the 4 or 5 range. And if you have that, like, you're unstoppable. Burrow and that receivers with a run game that's doing that, good night to everybody. And I think they recognize that. Those are there. I would say defensive pressure rate is going to be an important one. When you're looking at that defense, like, man, beyond Hendrickson, how much are they going to be able to get back there? Can they stay after the quarterback? That's going to be one to watch. Those are all honorable mentions to me. To Burrow, turnover worthy plays. You know, I talked about this earlier. Look, if you have a quarterback who does what Joe Burrow did the second half of last year and is just barely putting the ball in harm's way, and as much as they put on his plate, if he replicates that, if you're talking about 4, 5, 6 turnover-worthy plays over the course of the entire season, they're going to win a boatload of games, okay? Because he's going to make plays. Their receivers are going to make plays for him. And that means there's less of the pressure forcing bad plays or throwing the ball early in bad bounces or what have you, having to be overly anticipative, if you will, of certain throws because you're getting it out early. All of that, I think, plays into the end result of how many turnover-worthy plays do we see from Joe Burrow. Does that number be who he was the second half of last season? If that's the case, you're winning turnover differential, you're explosive, you're continuing drives, all of that stuff will win in a boatload of games. So I'll say all those kind of, I considered them all, but that's where I ended up with that one. Player or stat with the biggest regression concern. So there's a lot of different directions you can go with this here, Jay. What do you got?
Well, you kind of touched on it on the stats you mentioned before going with the Burrow turnover worthy plays. I'm going Trey Hendrickson. I just First of all, anytime you have a career year, you're ripe for regression. It's hard to duplicate that. Now, how far would he fall off? That's a different matter. But I the reason it's a concern is because what does that overall pass rush look like if Trey Hendrickson 2022 is not the same Trey Hendrickson 2021? Got a lot of young dudes. You got Sam Hubbard coming off the other end. But does that defensive pressure rate come anywhere close to what they did last year, which created a lot of those turnovers in the playoff run and during the regular season? Does it look anywhere close to that if Trey Hendrickson falls off, you know, even a little bit? That's my pick. It's hard to do what he did 2 years in a row.
He has been really good in camp.
Yes.
Like really, really. He has not looked like he has any let up in him. And he did it 2 years in a row.
He was really good at Saints.
He has 27 and a half sacks the last 2 years. His pressure rate was high in New Orleans. His pressure rate continued to be high. I don't disagree because, I mean, he was arguably production-wise one of the best, if not the best, edges, total production rates and every stat you can imagine last year. So it is hard to replicate that no matter who you are. And so I'm with you, but he has not looked like a dude who has had any let up in him in camp, but we'll see what that looks like when the season starts. I'm going to say Eli Apple, because, you know, I think they got a ton out of him last year where they didn't expect it. And they have a lot of pressure on him to be that again. And there's, you know, you have a track record of bouncing around up and down, a bit of a roller coaster. He's kind of a roller coaster personality in some people's eyes. What can you get that again? Can you bottle that again from Eli Apple? He's going to be targeted big time. We mentioned Chido Bey. The league knows that. The league knows him. You mentioned Mike Hilton. The league knows him. They're going to be looking to go after Eli Apple and test him. Will he be able to stand up to it? Still, there's really no backup that you're comfortable with at all. I mean, Trey Flowers, right, who was cut by Seattle midseason last year and came in and filled the tight end role thing. But, like, the Cam Taylor-Britt injury has that thing totally foobarred. Yeah. And so, you know, you have a lot of pressure on him. They need it. And that's why it's my biggest concern of regression potential is that because if he does regress – you have a massive hole in an otherwise really solid defense. Who will end up the biggest surprise, Jay? I have my argument is Cordell Volson.
That was my pick.
The same one. I think he plays solid, and we don't end up talking a ton about him as the year goes on. I think he's going to be okay. He's surrounded by a bunch of solid vets. He seems to have a solid head on his shoulders and has held up well at most turns. The coaches seem to have a lot of confidence in him, and I as big of a storyline as left guard has been, I think it fades as a storyline as the year goes on.
Yeah, from 1946 to 2014, no rookie offensive lineman made the Pro Bowl. No, I'm not picking Cordell Volson for the Pro Bowl, but from 2015 to current, you've seen it happen a lot. There have been Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin, Creed Humphrey, Rashawn Slater. I mean, there's a number of those guys that have come in and been good right away. And yeah, most of those guys are higher first round picks. Volson being between Jonah Williams and Ted Karras, and we talk all the time about no donkeys. I don't think he's going to even be close to that. I think the combination of Frank Pollock and all those veterans on that O-line are really going to bring him along and getting thrown into the fire right off the bat. Maybe he's not great against Pittsburgh in week one, but he's going to be better for it. And I think he is going to hold up and be a lot better than people think or slash hope.
Yeah. So our last one will be a run passer booter here. Let's do record most likely to fall. Okay. We've got Chase with the receiving record now at 1,455 yards, Burrow with the passing mark, franchise passing mark at 4,611, and Rudy Johnson still holds the record for most rushing yards in a season with 1,458. Record most likely to fall, run, pass, or boot, Jay?
booting the 1455 for Chase. I just, there's too many weapons. The ball is going to be spread around too much for one guy to dominate. Even though Chase did it last year with basically the same cast. I'll run with Burrow passing. I just think that's what he's ascending. He's still year three. I think so much of what he does is going to be even better this year. And because there are so many weapons out there, he'll be able to do it. I do like the idea of Joe Mixon challenging possibly Rudy Johnson's record, but for today's NFL and for a team that has the receiver options, they do. I just don't know that he's going to have the amount of carries to get there. Although you had him pretty high, would you have 261? So that's a heavy load, but I'm going to run with the Burrow passing, run with Mixon, or run with rushing record and boot the receiving record. I don't think anyone gets near 1455. Now, I won't say not won't get near it, but I don't think anyone tops 1455 this year.
Yeah, I don't. I don't have. I have Burrow as the one to fall in my actual projections at 4,702 yards this year. But remember the extra game. Which he didn't get last year, is it could help you, assuming that he's not being rested or missing any games during the year, could be the little bit of difference that you need. I think that's part of where that comes from, because that's more yardage, even at a lower yards per attempt number, just by the nature, I think, of they're not going to be as explosive with the 50-plus yard plays and things like that, which were just absurd last year. Totally unsustainable to think that you're going to have 12 50-plus yard plays again. I mean, NFL record. So I'm running with Burrow because I have that, and I'm passing on Chase, and I'm booting Rudy. I just don't see Zach Taylor, as long as he has Joe Burrow, ever challenging Rudy Johnson's rush yardage record. Like, even though I have some serious volume happening with Mixon, I do think that is going to be the case. That's a long way to go to get up to 1,458. Mixon at that usage would have to be up over 5 per carry. I don't see that happening, even with a revamped offensive line. And Chase, look, he was right there. Like, why can't he break his own? I mean, Justin Jefferson topped himself. I'm sure Chase is thinking, but I don't think it's crazy to think that he could top himself. So I'll pass on Chase and I'll boot Rudy. All right, so those are our questions. We're going to kind of do some more similar types of things with that at our live show at 50 West, when we have everybody in the house to offer up their answers, and have a lot of fun with that when we're down at the live show at 50 West on Thursday. So that will post as an episode, of course, once we get done down there. But obviously, we'd love to see you come and cheers with you, say hello, chat, talk Bengals, watch the game, all that stuff. Looking forward to seeing everybody down there. All right, let's get to what the artist formerly known as Working Title Scoops Nuggets. Shout out to our guy Tom Watson, who, you know, he's an excellent children's book writer who we have plowed through the Stick Dog and Stick Cat series here in my house, and loved every second of it. And shout out to him for sending those books my way, which they have been a big hit. But also, I should have known he'd be the one to come up and solve our words problem. And he has come up with this. He says, you know what? An acronym is where this needs to go. And he thought any relevant Bengals insights, extras, stories, otherwise known as Arby's.
That's great.
Any relevant Bengals insights, extras, and stories, give me your Arby's, Jay. That's where we're at. So we now have a new name for our Nuggets section, and so I appreciate Tom for the shout out. Also enjoyed a suggestion of "We've got the scoops," which was brought to me on Twitter, which I really liked. That it was a close second, so close. But I like the acronym. We're big acronym people here. So Jay, do you have any Arby's for me?
Yes, I have one. It's Trey Hendrickson. Already has recorded his first sack of the season. He sacked me. When I was polling people for their pick for the next Pro Bowl, he was watching a ping pong match, and I said, "Hey, can I grab you for something real quick while you're watching this?" And he said, "Sure." And so I asked him the question and told him he couldn't pick Joe Burrow. I forgot to mention he couldn't pick anyone in his room. And he said, "DJ Reader." And I said, "Oh, wait, I forgot. You can't pick anyone in your own room." He's like, "Well, I don't want to play then." He said, he said, "That's too hard." And I said, "Okay." I relented. I let him pick DJ Reader. So it was my bad for not laying the rules down in the first place. But appreciate Trey playing after I bent the rules for him.
I don't know. Did we mention the ping pong card table situation last time? I can't remember if we did or not. It has grown out of control.
Yes.
The locker room is currently consists of cornhole boards, two ping pong tables, and a card table used for bure games. Okay? Like real
and
like
card tricks.
Felt. What's that?
And card tricks.
And card tricks. Yeah, that's true. So you've got multiple ping. So whenever you hear any of these interviews, like you guys listened to Cheeto earlier, or any of these you're going to hear, you're going to constantly hear the sound of the ping pong ball, some music, maybe some cornhole boards hitting the. I mean, it has become just a frat house of recreation at this point inside of the Bengals locker room. It's, you know, hey, keeping it light. But you know what? This was a favorite trope this time of year when you know a team is starting to tighten up and trying to be more disciplined in a new season, they got rid of the ping pong table, right? Like that's where you found out. Or a team was too tight last year. They're trying to loosen up. They added a ping pong table, right? Like that's always the sign that people want to use as to why we can tell how things have truly changed. Well, you can't get looser than what they are right now because it is it is quite a competitive fest in there. Right now, I really at this point feel embarrassed that we don't have something that we set up in there. I mean, what can we? I feel like we need to bring something to the table. Maybe we can bring. What do you got, Jay? You got yard games.
Well, let's follow Jeff Hobson's advice. Never let him see you do anything athletic.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we're going to look ridiculous.
Well, honestly, it looks like if you go to one of these bars, it's like all the outdoor. Like maybe we bring in some giant Jenga or something that we can set up there on some side, or one of the giant Connect Four. We could drop that in a corner.
I don't know. I think you and I could hold our own in cornhole against any team they could come up with.
Oh, absolutely. I think I would absolutely say that you and I can beat any combination of people in that team. I will stand on the table for that one. I'll stand on the card table or the ping pong table or the other ping pong table for that one. Okay. Happily. All right. Let's go. So that's kind of my Arby's. I also had one thing that I just appreciated. You know, we've heard Zach Taylor talk a little bit about the need for the staff to not get obsessed with, you know, working till the lights go out and sleeping in the building and make sure you break yourself and the importance of being home and keeping the work-life balance as a part of sustaining through the season. He told everybody, get out of here. This past weekend, like go find your family, go home, go wherever, you know, not just home here, go back. I talked to Lou Anarumo for a story. It's running Wednesday and another story. It's going to run later this year. And I did it over Zoom and I was like, he said he was going to go golfing with his son. And I was like, oh, that's great. I said, I feel bad for you though, because it is pouring, huh? And he goes, oh, I'm in New York right now. So it is a beautiful day and we're about to go hit the links. And so pretty much everybody kind of went somewhere, wherever their home is, whatever they needed to do, get away, turn off. It's kind of the taking this bye week that exists now with the loss of the regular season and helping divide up the camp and regular season and really get a chance to say hi to your families, make sure you're staying connected there and find that work-life balance that you need before you go all in. I thought that was pretty cool. Just giving everybody the three extra days to really, really get away.
Little surprised / disappointed that Joe Burrow went to Ohio State Notre Dame instead of Ohio University, Florida Atlantic.
Hey, one game was closer than the other. I'll tell you you're that right. much. That's right. That's right. Go Bobs. Bob's with the 41-38 win over Florida Atlantic, Ohio State. Yeah, Sam Hubbard and Joe Burrow at Ohio State. Just a cavalcade of stars. I mean, they were showing that game in like the it was recruiting weekend. I won a big recruiting weekend of course it was. You know, it's Saturday night. You've got Notre Dame in town, and all your NFL alumni are off. So here comes Chase Young and Terry McLaurin and Joe Burrow and Sam Hubbard. And there were a ton of other people there on the sideline there for Ohio State. I mean, can you imagine being some 17-year-old kid thinking about going to Ohio State? Be like, yeah, I think I could sign up for this world. You know, there's a reason that their recruiting classes stay where they stay.
I thought I saw Von Bell in a picture there, too. He was never mentioned. It was just Hubbard and Burrow. We'll have to ask him if he did make the trip as well, because another Ohio State product.
Yes, that's true. There will be plenty of Bengals that could go up there. So yes. Even more Arby's for you there on that one. All right, we're running late here, so let's just try to knock out a couple quick questions that I saw on here for those of you that came to watch on YouTube. Really appreciate that. This one from Mr. Issippi. I see what you're doing. I get it. I like it. Love the show, guys. Question for whenever you get to them. How much of a difference in record do you think it would make for the Bengals to have the 12th best O-line versus the 21st best O-line? It's a good question. Like, what is that marker? I think there's a win there. I mean, for winning 1.5 war on that, right? I mean, look, they were so bad last year. So what are we talking about? You know, when it comes to being better this year, they won 10. They went 10-6 essentially before resting starters last year. Is it, you know, is it 12-5, 13-4? I'd put it at 1.5 war on that.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. 1 or 2. It sounds like a major difference, but you look at what they did last year with a bad line. How much more is that going to help just to move up 9 spots in the rankings? I think 1.5 is right. You're right on it.
Let's go one more quick one. And we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. Actually, here we go. Here's one we didn't talk about earlier. Once we get to questions, this is from Jacob Leroy. I'll ask the same one I asked James Rapine. Boo, James. Just kidding. We love James. We'll see him on Thursday. Ask James Rapine for all three of you. Oh, this was when Mo was with us. Sorry. Mo's not going to get the answer to this one. Maybe we'll ask him Thursday as well. Are you more excited to see the new offensive line play or see the new Dax Hill defense play? It's a good question. What do you think, Jay?
I'm going to go with the volume there and go to the new O-line. It's every single play. I don't know what Dax Hill's snap share is going to look like. I expect it to be significant, but he's not a starter. He's not going to be out there every play. Yeah, it's more fun to watch those position guys, but the big question is this O-line not are they going to be better? You assume they will. How much better are they going to be? And just watching Cordell Volson and there's still questions about Collins because we haven't really seen him do much outside of getting some fights at a joint practice. So there's a lot of intrigue with that O-line, and I might be contradicting myself here when we just went 1.5 wins on the last question, but I do think it is a very relevant piece to the success this year. And it's watching 5 guys as opposed to 1. So I'm going to lean toward the O-line.
I agree with you. That'd be my choice as well. The fact that no one wants to talk about the Dax Hill role, like it is it is like some sort of sealed document, right? That it is confidential. No one dares. This goes all the way back to draft night. It was like, well, Lou's got a plan for him, but we don't want to talk. You know, we got ideas. And that continued through yesterday, where again, it was Zach Taylor saying, we're not going to talk about what the role is. And I talked to Lou on many occasions as I try to dig into the defense story. And it is a tightly kept secret of how exactly they do plan on utilizing Dax Hill in this third safety role. There's only so many things you can do out there, but my expectation is to see a whole lot of everything. So I am excited to see what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Make no mistake, I think that's going to be really interesting just because of the way they are keeping it so tight-lipped at this point. However, yeah, I mean, the O-line's the story, going to continue to be the story. And so it'll be really interesting to see how they look in protecting Joe Burrow. All right. Thanks to everybody that has watched on YouTube and those of you listening. Again, I'll be back with another episode, an interview with Caroline and Elizabeth Blackburn, as we get a front office point of view on where things stand with the Bengals as the season begins. And then our live show on Thursday night, 7:00, 50 West Brewing Company. Optimistic Bobby will be there. Cavalcade of local reporters, media folks who are excited to share our opinions and maybe get after it with each other. I have to go back and listen to last year's because there were some very interesting comments that were proven very wrong as we go back and listen to those arguments we had then. But it's supposed to be a beautiful night for the Beer Garden at 50 West. And, man, I'm excited for it. Rams, Bills right afterwards. We'll hang out and have some pops with those of y'all that are hanging around. So thanks to everybody for listening, watching, however you follow along, and we will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.